I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. With me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. This week, we're talking about monogamy and asking the very important question, is it cheating if it's with a sex robot? And we meet the UK's leading female poker player who tells us why learning the tricks of a poker table could help you in life.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Yes, we are going to talk about sex and specifically when you should not be having it, which is outside of the monogamous agreement you've clearly made. So this comes from a piece written by relationships expert Tammy Nelson this week when she says, actually, we should all be creating monogamy agreements. We shouldn't just assume because we're in a relationship with somebody that it is monogamous, nor should we assume that what they mean by monogamy is what we mean by monogamy. Ladies, when you are going out with somebody and you get to that point where sort of, I think it's a weirdly British thing, where you're going out for a bit and then suddenly you introduce them to your friends or they introduce you to their friends and one or other of you says, this is my boyfriend / girlfriend. And you go, oh, we are now boyfriend and girlfriend. And suddenly all this stuff comes with it, including that you're not going to sleep with other people. Have you ever then sat down and had a conversation about what do we mean by being in a monogamous relationship?
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, you can.
Nah. So for me, it's been slightly different as I've got older. It hasn't been, ooh, that moment when you say we're boyfriend and girlfriend. Yeah. The conversation around, are we sleeping with other people, happens a lot sooner. Because it's at the forefront of my mind as a question. And so that question comes in quite quickly, especially at the point where I then start having sex with someone. I have an interesting relationship with monogamy. I'm not convinced there is one person that you find or I will find for the rest of my life that I want to be with forever and ever and ever. I think 10 years is a good innings.
Very good stretch, yeah.
Yeah. So I also think that I would want to be really, really angry if my partner had sex with someone else because this is a violation of our relationship and it's disrespectful. But I know there's a part of me that would understand the context. If I was in an environment and I was just energetically drawn to someone and we had a moment, I get it. And so my brain tells me there's a way I should behave. And actually my heart tells me that I do just think we have one life. And if I was in a room with a really hot guy and I was in a relationship with another hot guy and I wanted to do something with that hot guy, I don't know if I wouldn't not do that thing.
Could be just deemed as a bit greedy.
It could be. But so these are the things I think about. And these are the conversations that I have.
Have you had a conversation with somebody where you said, actually, I just want you to know that this is a possibility that could happen?
I have actively discussed, open relationships and how they feel about open relationships and how I feel about open relationships. Some guys just completely don't get it at all.
Yeah.
Some guys, that's great because I can still have a relationship with someone else. And then they forget it means the same thing for me. And then they go, oh, no, I don't like that. And some guys get it that on the journey of a long relationship, actually, it's a conversation that you want to have and you should be checking in more regularly. And that's why I'm excited. I'm dating someone now and we have an open conversation around, we should just check in regularly that we look at each other and want to be with each other.
Yeah.
And at the point where either of us doesn't, or there's someone else, I'd rather we were honest and have that conversation. A robot, no. I know we're going to come on to that. I'm not here for the robots, but I could understand.
But I think the thing is, I think with monogamy is there's a lot of drivers that cause people to be non-monogamous, and some of them are smart, intelligent conversations where you're like, actually, it's a moment, you know, an adult. But then there's some people who are doing that because of their own, yeah, I don't know, they want that validation, or they're not feeling desired by their partner. Yeah, yeah. So it's driven by, not from a place of, I'm going to make this decision because this is a moment of chemistry, but it's driven by other things that then means that they end up regretting that then jeopardize their relationship. I don't know how you can agree to this. I think you can want to be monogamous. I think you can be ambitious about being monogamous. But I think that there's so much research out there now that we are not naturally
monogamous.
There's like one animal or one thing on this planet that is actually monogamous, and everything else isn't.
Don't
and
we're they not die actually wired after that way. They have sex?
Is that dolphins? Don't know. We'll ask. We've got a relationships expert joining us, relationship expert and host of the Baggage Reclaim podcast, Natalie Lu, is on the phone. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Harriet. How are you?
Good, thank you. So let's start with what I'm going to say is a simple question. It's not a simple question. What do we mean by the word monogamy?
Well, typically when we think of a monogamous relationship, it means that you are in a relationship together. Ideally, it's a mutually fulfilling relationship, and you are faithful to each other. So you're only with each other. And so anything else outside of that, i.e. if you're sleeping with other people, you know, particularly if it's on the quiet, it means you're continuing to date while you're actually still in a relationship. And so that is non-monogamous. It's quite interesting listening to what you guys are saying, because I actually, when you talked about that, the quintessential English experience of you go to meet each other's friends and you go, how should I introduce you? That's exactly what happened with me and my now husband. You know, I think it was on our second or third official date, and we were going to a party, and he was like, I think I'm going to introduce you as my girlfriend. And boom. That's, you know, where it started from. It's quite fascinating, because at the start of this, you were saying about how attitudes towards monogamy have changed, and how monogamy, how it used to be, isn't quite the same as what it is now. Mm. I think that people's attitudes towards monogamy have very much to do with their values and how they were brought up, and messages that they picked up along the way about commitment, about you know, being faithful, about what monogamy means. And what I found fascinating was this idea that, okay, everybody should have an agreement, but I think we all kind of really do know what monogamous means.
But do we though? Because one of the things that I find really interesting is, Nat and I have had this discussion before. So, like, for me, if my other half has a really good female friend and he goes over to that female friend's house for dinner, I am very chilled about that. That's fine.
Yep.
Nat,
also.
Absolutely. Mm-mm. Not.
No. Mm-mm. No. No. No.
And so, intrinsically, we already have different ideas about what monogamy is. And yet, do we need to have that kind of level of in-depth discussion up front?
For clarity, you can go out for dinner with a female friend. You cannot go to her house.
Very
where
specific.
She cooks for you and you eat her food in that space.
That's a little strange, I think. I mean, I think the whole... One of the things I say to people is that... Because I hear from a hell of a lot of people who believe that they are in a relationship. And I said, did you actually have a conversation about this? Is this something that is out in the open between the two of you? Mm. Did you mutually agree that you're in a relationship? And 99% of the time, these people who are now coming to talk to me about their issues, they just assumed that they were in a relationship. And then the next thing is that when issues come up further down the line about, for instance, monogamy, is that they assume, like you guys mentioned, that one person's idea of what constituted a relationship or what was acceptable was the same as the others, which actually an open and ongoing dialogue does need to happen. So at the point where two people agree to be in a relationship, I always say it's a good idea to make sure you're actually on the same page about what a relationship means. Because I hear from the people who go, oh, yeah, yeah, they said that, like, we're in a relationship. And then a month or so, well, actually, it turns out that, he's actually still sleeping with other people. And I said, well, obviously, you need to have a conversation about what each of your ideas are about a relationship. Because if you're not on the same page, you're not in the same relationship.
Wow. I'm going to ask, we're going to discuss what page sex robots are on in a minute after this break.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
We are talking monogamy and when or when not something is monogamous. We've got Natalie Liu, relationships expert, on the phone. Now, you've got a question.
I do. So, I think this is, you know, I do think people need to have conversations and almost have some kind of monogamy agreement because things really have changed. And reading through some of these case studies, and maybe a month ago, we had the CMO of Ashley Madison on the phone, mm-hmm. and he made a very compelling case for why married people might want to have an affair with another married person where actually it's just about that one-off interaction and not leaving their other half. And I think people should have a conversation about what is the line of when someone goes too far. So the case studies we've got here, we've got Mort's wife, Anne, felt deceived when she discovered that Mort and his buddies went to a strip club on their golfing trip. Because he didn't get a lap dance, he didn't feel like he needed to tell Anne, and obviously Anne was really upset. Where is that on the line in terms of conversation? But also flirtatious emails with a stranger on the internet, sexting, feeling attracted sexually to another person, looking at another person when you're with your other half, or even if you're not with your other half, but staring at someone you find attractive, watching pornography alone. There's a spectrum. What each person finds disrespectful really is, it's blurry. And I think if you start a relationship without having these conversations, it's very easy to get hurt very quickly.
Natalie.
Oh, sorry.
No, sorry. I was saying to you, over to you, Natalie. I'm like, so where do we go from here? Where's the line?
Well, I mean, those things that you listed off there, there's some big variances in there. So, for instance, messaging flirtatiously with somebody online. Many people, not all, would perceive that as emotional cheating. Some people say that actually feels worse for them than it would if, say, their partner went out and had sex with somebody once. Now, of course, somebody else would turn around and go, no, I prefer if they were messaging somebody than they actually went and had sex. But it just goes to show that there are such variances. The pornography issue, which is not everybody... Obviously, there are a lot of people out there that do watch pornography, but obviously sometimes people don't want their partner to be watching that. And what happens is, yes, you could start the relationship off by going, well, I don't like this, and I don't like this, and I don't want you to do this, and I don't want you to do that. And that may have its uses to a certain degree, but it depends on what stage of the relationship that you're at. And it can sound like you're sort of listen off everything that you don't like or things that you're afraid of being hurt about, and trying to, force a person to disclose anything, unsavory about them up front. Whereas if you're having a sort of an ongoing dialogue and you encourage the person to be open and you're trying to build up, you know, this sort of love, care, trust and respect between the two of you, so this intimacy, you are going to be having conversations and going, oh, actually, I'm surprised that you're doing that, but okay. Or actually, no, I don't particularly like that. I think that there are some obvious things. So some of the examples that you gave there, did you say what about flirting in public with somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're with your partner or not, I hear from a lot of people who they've been out with their partner and their partner is rubbernecking somebody else. It's really disrespectful to do that. It's like, what, you couldn't wait till at least I got up and went to the bathroom or something? But it's like, hold on a second, you're out with me, and you're eyeballing other people here. There's a disrespect, I think, that's going on there.
Emma.
But also, so if you're with your partner and you can see the interactions and you can obviously have a conversation and go, you know, I find that disrespectful when you do that. But there's a lot of stuff here that you could deem as cheating. The reality is you don't know. You are not in your partner's head. You don't know how they're interacting with another human being. You don't even know if they've cheated on you on a Saturday night. So making the agreement is kind of ridiculous because you would never know.
Exactly.
I disagree.
Well, you wouldn't. You wouldn't know. All you can do is go, right, I don't know what they're up to. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But if I catch them doing cheating on me or I find out they slept with someone else, then it's over or whatever I want it to be.
No, so I'm saying have the conversation up front. So it goes back to the conversation I was saying about having an open relationship. I share what I deem to be the sort of relationship that I want to have. And that includes the sort of sex that I want to have, how I want to feel, what my insecurities are, and it's a two-way conversation. And so
you think it's a two-way conversation, but you have absolutely no idea.
But I'm asking them as well. And so then there's a kind of, this is what's acceptable and this is what isn't acceptable. And these are the grey areas. So if this was to happen, I would need to work out how I feel based on the scenario, because I just don't know in that moment.
I have a scenario for you.
Okay.
Your partner masturbating, does that count as cheating?
No.
Right. So your partner having sex with a sex robot.
Oh, God.
Does that count as cheating?
Because you're weird. It doesn't count as cheating. It basically says to me that you're weird because you'd rather have sex with a robot than have sex with me. Or, I don't know.
Hang on. You're just saying you wouldn't necessarily mind if your partner had sex with someone else. So why does it matter if it was a robot?
Because it's weird. How could you get off to a robot? I just don't get it. It's like
Natalie,
so sterile.
Intimacy issues coming up there. I actually watched the episode of 30 Rock. I'm rewatching that now at the moment, and there's an episode with James Franco where he's basically in a relationship with a Japanese manga pillow, I think it is, and he takes the pillow. Yeah, he does, and basically his agent arranges for him to have one of these show relationships because he doesn't want to draw attention to the fact that he's in this relationship with a pillow. And apparently this is a thing. I actually thought they were joking about it, but there are actually people who have these pillows, and it's got, like, you know, these manga figures.
Yeah,
you know,
it's manga porn, isn't there?
Yeah, and they take the pillow out with them, and so the idea was to have this show relationship.
Wow. But, weird.
I get the whole, I say to people that it's so important to actually have an open and ongoing dialogue, not just about monogamy, but actually where the real intimacy of showing each other who you are, mm-hmm. so that you can build your relationship on that foundation. And I get the whole being honest and upfront about, actually, this is the type of relationship that I want to be in, because unless you mutually agree that you're in that relationship over time, you're going off in different directions. And the thing is, you need to get a sense of whether you share the same core values. Now, if, for instance, and I hear again this all the time, people say, actually, my values are that it's really important for me to be in a relationship with somebody who just wants to be with me. That's fine. But why are you in a relationship with somebody who wants to sleep around with everybody else? You have two entirely different sets of values in that area. And so I remember last year I went to a talk where there was a discussion about polyamory and swinging and all the rest. And I said, what people have to do is they have to know themselves. So, and that's what I'm hearing here, is that you guys actually know yourself. And so people who know themselves can be pretty honest and upfront about what it is that they want and where they're headed. But what happens is people say to themselves, oh, yeah, I'm totally cool with being in an open relationship. I'm totally cool with swinging. And they say it because they're afraid that if they say that they're not, that they're going to miss out on being with this person, that they're going to endanger the possibility. Mm. But if you're going to sit there gnawing your fingernails apart and shredding yourselves with anxiety night after night because you're wondering who your partner's with, who they're sleeping with, you're competing with somebody else, that's messed up. And also,
Natalie, I love you. I'm going to have to stop you there. But if you want more of Natalie's wisdom, do check out our podcast or our website, Baggage Reclaim. She is brilliant, and I just, everything I know good about relationships, basically I learned from Natalie Liu. She's amazing.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We are talking all things poker, which allows me to very excitingly talk about my favourite ever story when I won a Hermes Birkin bag in a poker game.
You did.
Proudest
moment.
Have you
still got that? Have you sold it yet?
No, I flogged it. So we are talking to UK's leading female poker player, Liv Borey. Hi, Liv.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So you say there are lessons that poker teaches you that apply to all of life. Tell us what they are.
Sure. So let me think. So obviously some of the, you know, the classic things people think of when they think of poker is about like reading body language and spotting when people are bluffing you and lying and so on. And so it can definitely help train you to sort of look for what the things that humans do when they're being deceitful. But what I find actually more useful is sort of the way it teaches you to put aside your own desires and biases. Because, you know, like when we really want to believe that something is true, then we'll look for all, you know, we'll sort of focus on all the evidence that confirms that belief and forget about or overlook all the evidence that doesn't confirm it. And so, you know, if you do that in poker, that's extremely dangerous. If I want to look for all the reasons why someone might be bluffing me because my cards aren't very good, but I really don't want to lose what I've already got in the pot, then I'm going to get myself into a lot of trouble. So, yeah, it sort of teaches you to think about things in a really sort of scientific way. And, you know, that applies to so many parts of life.
Is it really a skill, though, poker, or is it just luck? Because, you know, you are dealing out cards. You don't know what cards you're going to get. I'm just being devil's advocate.
Yeah, for sure. So it's both. It basically depends on how long you play for. Like if you and I sat down, I don't know how good you are, but I'll assume I'm better. I assume I'm better than you.
Definitely.
If you sat down and just played, you know, like 10 hands for half an hour or something like that, then, you know, really there's a lot of luck in that. I might only win 52, 53% of the time. But if we played for a week straight and played 100,000 hands or something like that, then I would expect to win around 95, 96% of the time. So it's basically, you know, the more opportunities you have to play, then the bigger the skill factor comes. But over any given night, then there's a lot of luck. So it's a bit of both.
But is that also then the life skill, right, with everything that we do in life? The more you sit at the table and are willing to play, whether it's getting up on the stage and speaking for the first time or being on the radio or asking for a pay rise, you sit at the table and it becomes easier with practice and you do it over and over and over again until, you know, the thing you ask for, it becomes easier to get the yes. That's the connection that I make in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like with anything, the more
work you put into it, the more experience you get, then the better your sort of performance, you know, the quality of your decisions are, and so on. And so then with time, then sort of you can turn luck to your advantage. But that doesn't mean that, of course, there will still always be unlucky things that can happen to us in life. You know, I can sit and play perfectly and still get my aces cracked. And that's just the nature of the game, and that's also the nature of life. Sometimes it throws us curveballs and bad luck too.
Liv, if I want to get into poker playing, and I'm thinking there's probably a lot of men playing poker, as there is in most things, lots of men. Where do you go to play poker? Like, do I have to go to a casino to play it? Where do I go?
So you've got many options. You can, if you want to play in person, then you can probably just go to your local casino, and usually they'll have poker games going. Make sure that you play, you know, real poker where you're playing against other people, as opposed to these like pretend poker games that some casinos have where you're just actually playing against the house. You don't want to do that. So go to your casino and there'll be poker games going there. But honestly, I think the best way for anyone to learn is by playing online. So I'm a member of what's called Team PokerStars. And PokerStars has free games, basically, where you can play against real people, but from your computer. So I love just playing in my pajamas at home. I don't have to go out and look anyone in the face. And then once you get to a stage where you feel comfortable playing for money, then you can play for real money too.
Do they teach you? Do these online things? Because that's the other thing as well. I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay, I kind of know, but like, is it easy to pick up playing poker just sat at a table at a casino, or do you have to do a bit of homework before you do that?
I mean, I would recommend reading the rules first. There's like, you know, there's so much information out there now. Like I think there's a YouTube video of me giving a poker tutorial.
Okay.
If you search my name and poker tutorial, you'll find it. It's very cheesy, but you know, like, but the point is that there's so many resources out there that will explain the rules, but then at some point, you know, you've got to learn by doing. You know, the key thing is basically, like with all things, don't go jumping in too much at the deep end in terms of playing for what you're not comfortable with. Don't expect to win. You might win early on, but it's probably that you're just getting lucky. Don't expect to be good quickly. Yeah. That's often a mistake people make, is that they think they've got a talent really early on in the game when possibly they're just getting lucky.
Some luck. What's the best prize or the most amount of money you've won then?
The most I've ever won in one go was 1.25 million euros.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That is amazing. Oh my God. I am watching your tutorial tomorrow.
It was a really good week.
Oh my word.
Yeah, okay. It was a tournament in Italy about, it was 9 years ago now.
And have you lost all that money? Did you gamble?
What's the most you've lost on one hand?
1.1 million.
In one tournament, I think the biggest amount I've ever personally lost was around $25,000. But you know, usually I try to be pretty cautious with how much I, you know, invest of myself into any games that you play, because it's, you know, it's like anything. If you're investing in the stock market and so on, you'd be really stupid to go and put all of your money into one stock and so on. You need to diversify, and the same thing goes with poker or anything that you want to do. If you wanted to take up golf, you'd be really stupid to go and buy yourself a £5,000 set of golf clubs if you don't even know if you know what you're really doing and if you like it. No, you want to sort of start off small and slowly build up when your bankroll can support it.
Can you legitimately just live off playing poker? Is there just a kind of a rule of luck that if you're playing enough games, you should win enough money of where you could probably just play poker as your job?
Well, so only if you're better on average than the people that you're playing against. Mm-hmm. So no, not anybody can. And I mean, the game is also much, much harder now than it used to be, sort of 10, 15 years ago when I first started playing it, because of the internet and so on, there's so many more resources out there for people to learn really fast. So it's definitely harder to like earn a pure living from. I'm not, you know, it's not my main thing that I do now as well. I do some other things. But it is technically possible, but it's only a very small percentage of people out of all the people that play. Most people just play as, you know, for, as a pastime, because they enjoy it, they learn something from it, and so on. And that, to me, is what the game's about. It's about you should be going to have fun, and if you win some money, then you do. But no, it is obviously, it's possible. Like, if you are the best, then yeah, over the long run, you'll expect to, you could live off it for sure.
Oh, I think I've just discovered a new hobby.
Liv, you've also given a TED Talk, which has been viewed over 2 million times.
Yeah.
Why do you think it has connected with so many people?
I think because, honestly, poker is, like, it's such a popular game. And it's, because to me, it's like the ultimate game of wits. It's got a little bit of something for everybody. For people who, you know, love being all about sort of intuition and reading people's souls. Well, there's obviously a lot of that. But or also if you're really into sort of maths and analysis and calculations, then there's tons of that and so on. So it's got all these different, or if you're like into psychology, it's another part of it. So I just think it's just got such a mass appeal. And then obviously we've seen it in you know, lots of films and so on. It's become really popularized. So it's just it's a game that I think the majority of people at least know the rules to these days. So maybe that's why.
Are more women playing?
Yes. It's improved a ton since I, you know, first started playing. Back then, I mean, I would often be the only woman in a tournament of 100, 200 people. Whereas these days, you know, it's more like 90%, 10%, or even 80-20. And so it's a really good sign. It's definitely moving in a more balanced direction. But that said, I still think we should be seeing more ladies playing. There's certainly no reason why women can't play and succeed and be great at the game. Because again, it's a game of the mind. There's nothing physical about it.
Liv, finally, what's your favourite hand? What do you like to be dealt?
Aces. Two aces. I try not to have superstitions. I don't think they serve any real purpose. I go with what the math says, and ace is the best.
Liv, thank you so much for joining us. Liv Vorry, one of the UK's top poker players. 1, 2, 3, 4!
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.